talking heads. They had a big powwow. They said, what are we, what are we, what are we, what are we, what do we do now? The only thing to do is tell the southern boy he's gotta go.
Welcome to the League of Untouchable American Gamers official podcast, the ultimate podcast. I'm Steve Weeks, coming to you from Houston, Texas. How'd you like the song? It was I Will Not Apologize. No, I will not apologize. You'll get no apology from me. If anybody owes anybody an apology, Aldi owes me and every other gamer on that side an apology. Why? Because without a valid reason, he banned Michael Barnes. This is a person who made many contributions, and it took a lot of time, and a lot of people like myself counted on these, and we're counting on future contributions from Michael Barnes. You know, this idea that Aldi is some kind of moral leader and is above reproach, and his behavior is above reproach, is a total crap. The idea that Aldi sets the standards of behavior that are above reproach is total crap. Aldi calling me out for making a, quote, libelous statement that was obviously a joke. I mean, come on. And here's something. Now, listen, guy, here's something you don't know. I sent Aldi an email right after he sent me that email telling me he was upset about it. I sent him an email that explained it was a joke. And I said, lighten up, Aldi. I mean, what is it? He didn't respond to that. And even after, get this, after he had the email in possession. I don't know if he read or not, but I did send it. He's still playing dumb on the site like he didn't know it was a joke, even after I told him it was a joke. And come on, even if it wasn't a joke, should anybody be surprised? Aldi is a banner. He's a banning fool. He banned Michael Barnes. Now, he's really banning me. That's what it amounts to. But it's more, as Michael Barnes sent me an email, it's more of a stealth, quote, stealth ban. It's obvious because I can't believe that anybody is stupid enough to think that wasn't a joke. Aldi is so obvious in every one of his so-called little strategies he plays, his little games he plays on the sites, which is why I can read him like a book, which is why he can never beat me in any strategy game. I mean, come on, he lost a poker tournament at the Gathering of Friends. Those guys aren't obviously the hardcore poker players. I mean, come on. And look, And look at Daniel Karp's statement on that thread that Mr. Skeletor started, the Beware About podcast. Daniel Karp, the admin, says Aldi has banned people before. He's banned them before for running scams in the marketplace. So saying Aldi hasn't banned anybody is total crap. I mean, we know he banned Barnes. And when Aldi banned Barnes, he posted on that, he said that this is the first time it's ever been done in the history of the site. And now you have Daniel Karp saying like it's a regular activity for banning people in the marketplace for running scams. I think we really need some clarification on this because we're getting two different stories. On one side, Aldi says this is the first time anybody's been banned. And here's Daniel Karp saying that people have been banned before for running scams in the marketplace. So what's the truth there? I think we need clarification. Now, Aldi also claimed when he banned Barnes that he had issued warnings, multiple warnings. And as you guys know, I've talked to Barnes himself, and Barnes admitted he never received numerous warnings from Aldi. And the only thing he really received is some veiled thing that some meek message from Aldi that he thought that he complied with. And, you know, Aldi is incredibly inconsistent with his behavior. My agreement after the contest, that contest I ran where I gave Barnes my password, was that I was to be banned for 2 weeks. And that was and here at the last minute, Aldi twists a joke I made into a libel accusation. That's total BS, all right? Aldi's behavior is reprehensible. He is not a stand-up guy. He sits in his house all day working on his little website and has really, I think, lost touch with reality. This all, you know, folks, this all really boils down to a boy doing a man's job. And frankly, I really think Dirk needs to get back helping him full-time because it's obvious that he can't handle it. And I don't know how anybody in good faith could donate to a Board Game Geek the way Aldi has behaved. And there was a great, great post by... Forgive me if I mispronounce your name, Jeff Boer. He's a game designer, retailer. He responds. He said he's been in Aldi's house camp generally, but when you start breaking your own posted policies, how can your advertisers trust you to maintain traffic counts or keep your agreements in other business senses? Jeff goes on to say, if I were Hasbro, I'd certainly be taking a long, hard look at the, quote, allowed to be assholes list and membership policies. The bigger money isn't in the euro, and the management's pretty consistent policy of attacking those who advocate, quote, certain genres of games doesn't bode well for either page views or advertising revenues. Certainly the fact that some folks are given free passes while others are disciplined affected my decision not to advertise here, as did the pricing, which is based on page views. What a great post by Mr. Boer there, and I certainly agree with his sentiments on that with the inconsistent behavior. Some people give him passes, some not. And obviously, I was not given a pass, but that's okay. Another interesting comment came from Mike Siggins, you know, the guy with the English accent we talked about last time. He was kind of upset here, and a few at the league got upset at him. On his post on the thread, he said, I have to say this is all getting on my tits now. What was a great place to come and read stuff about games is rapidly declining. Mr. Siggins goes on to say, whiners, if you don't like the environment, please sod off elsewhere. I like it here, and I don't want a bunch of tossers pulling down a great site. On his tits, he says. He also said that before when after he listened to my podcast, he said that my music got on his tits, which really, Mr. Siggins, pleases me to no end, believe me. To know that I can ruffle the feathers of a stuffed shirt like Siggins is really brings me a lot of joy. But the one really upset about the last Siggins comment was a member here at the league, Colonel Winston Smythe, who is also English. And I have called the Colonel and Mike Siggins here to see if we can, you know, see if we can work this thing out. But I'm afraid the negotiations have deteriorated as Colonel Winston Smythe is now demanding satisfaction. So he and Mr. Siggins are having a duel. When I told Siggins that he thought I was referring to the game duel, and he started reading the rules, but said, no, Mike, this is a good old-fashioned, real old-fashioned duel between gentlemen. Isn't that right, Colonel? Yes, quite, yes. Okay, so let's go out to the field of honor where we have, where we will have a duel between Colonel Winston Smythe and Mike Siggins. Okay, gentlemen, welcome to the field of honor. Unfortunately, it has come to this, and we will have a duel by the official rules of dueling, wherever those come from. Gentlemen, I will count to five, and then you will turn around and shoot. Now, I want you gentlemen to stand back to back, please. Mr. Siggins, please don't press your ass so close to the colonel. You are making him a little uncomfortable, and I'm afraid he may turn around and shoot you now. So, yeah, that's better. Thank you. Gentlemen, we will have the count. Are you ready? Five, four, three, two, one. Ooh, ah. Looks like Siggins has been hit. Yes, he has been hit right in the tits. He has gone from a double D cup to an A cup with a well-placed shot by Colonel Winston Smythe. I hope Siggins is okay. He showed a good account of himself, though. He's a pretty good dueler, although he's a little slow to react, but he got in there good. And sorry about the tits, Mike. Okay. Who are we talking to this? Oh, Ken Bradford, staff writer on A Fortress America Trash. Great commentary over there, with a few exceptions here and there. But let's talk to Ken right now. Here we go. I recognize the area code there. Are you in Huntsville?
I am indeed.
That's my hometown.
Yep.
So let's get started. Tell me, how are you liking Fortress Ameritrash?
It's a lot of fun. It's a place that we've been able to write about a bunch of games that may or may not have gotten a fair shake on Board Game Geek.
Right.
We had started that. I know a lot of the opinion was that we'd started that because Michael had gotten banned, but honestly, we'd had that in the works, I think, since January. Matt Thrower put that together for us. He had sent out a bunch of emails for interested parties to participate.
Right, uh-huh.
And that was, I think, when Mike did get barred, that was, Mike got banned, that was our, I guess, inspiration to really get it started.
Right. Have you met Matt Thrower?
I haven't. I think he is over in, I think he's over across the pond. I have not met him before.
He's in England, right?
Yep.
Okay, who's the best writer over there on Fortress Ameritrash? In your humble opinion,
can I play the fifth on that?
Okay,
actually, no. I'm pretty much amazed by the contributions that everybody has made. Everybody is on board, and we've got a lot of talented people writing there. You know,
yeah, I enjoy reading it every day. It's really good. I got an email from you, and you posted this on Fortress Ameritrash, your recent post about how you went to Atlanta.
I did. I made up an elaborate excuse to travel to Atlanta on business just so I could go board game, meet up with Robert and Michael and their group down there. They've got an incredible gaming scene going on down there. They have it at a college there, Mercer College, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And when I got there, there was, I guess, 25 to 30 people there just playing all kinds of games. I'm jealous that they've got this amazing gaming scene going.
Yeah, right.
With both Robert and Michael there, we played a few Ameritrash games, and then, of course, Mr. Skeletor gave me heck because we played...
I saw that, yeah.
Mission Red Planet.
I saw that, yeah.
Guilty as charged, but it was Mike's game, so...
I see.
Take some of the heat off me there a little bit.
So was out of that 30 people there at Mercer College, you said, was it mostly Euros being played or mostly Ameritrash? What was
Well, when I got there, looked like there were some folks at a faraway table, and they were playing, it looked like one of the Settlers variants or something like that. There was also another large table, they were playing Liar's Dice. Apparently that's a weekly thing for those guys,
right,
playing Liar's Dice.
That's a great game.
Something that caught my eye was there were two guys that were playing War of the Ring right there near the entrance, which is one of my absolute favorite games.
You gave that a 10, right?
I did. I loved that game very much. It was one of my first, I guess, big purchases when I got back into the board game hobby a few years ago,
uh-huh.
And it's something I would gladly still play. And couldn't find out it was a trap set for me. The guy, Michael, had told this guy that I was coming down to game with him and
right.
profile to see what I was interested in. So that whole War of the Ring thing was a ruse just to get me to play, and it worked. I ended up getting sucked into a game with a guy's name was, I believe, Will Kenyon, a really cool guy. And I had a whole arms list of games that wanted to play, but I'm getting sucked into about a 3-hour game of Lord of the Ring there.
All right. That sounds good. Now, let's talk a little bit about Board Game Geek. Have you cut back on your contributions on Board Game Geek, or are you still contributing?
My last two reviews I've done, and, of course, that last session report, I put them on Fortress Ameritrash. I did not put them on Board Game Geek, which is saying something because I'm a bit of a geek gold whore, because I have bought expansions and replacement pieces and all kinds of junk with geek gold. I got to say that I wanted, at first I was doing it because, what point would there be to people to come check out our blog if we're putting that content somewhere else? It's not like
that's true, yeah.
Some reviewers who will do a review and then post it, 1,000 different places on the internet. I just wanted to kind of give people a reason to come there if we were providing quality content that you couldn't get anywhere else.
Right.
That was kind of the decision behind it. But then recently I kind of figured, I didn't care if I did post it there or not. It was kind of a different shift there, I suppose. And it's not a bashing against Board Game Geek exactly. I don't know. The atmosphere there is different.
Yes, it is. I agree with that. Now, you posted an interesting thread a while back in the forums on Board Game Geek asking, you were inquiring about the policy for banned users. And you were asking if it was okay, like, to post a link from Michael who's been banned, or did you ever get an answer on that? I was confused reading through that.
Daniel Karp is one of the admins on there, and I think that Daniel is a great guy. And he responded fairly early in the thread that he was honest. He said they didn't really have a policy yet because it was a work in progress. Perhaps some admins had been guilty of being a little bit overzealous, and they were working on it, and to be patient with him. And that was satisfactory for me because it was a new thing for them, and I don't know. I kind of went with that. Now, I haven't seen anything expounded on that, but I think Aldi caught so much crap for actually banning someone.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to do it again for a while.
Okay, let's get back to games here. I was looking on your hot 10 list, and you got number 3 is Wizard's Quest. That's that old Avalon Hill game?
Yep, I've had that in my collection for a long time, and I've played that on... There's an AI version you can play that you can download on the internet and play.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I played it that way, but it's just one of those games I've owned forever and never gotten the physical thing to the table, so... it's a cool game, though.
Some people have said that that game could probably use a makeover because, the bits are just cardboard counters.
Yeah,
and it might be.
It comes from a whole different era entirely,
right,
before you could get, hordes of cheap plastic things from overseas and put your boxes full of them and get it at a reasonable price. So the little orc counters are cool. They've got their little demon faces on them and everything.
Yeah, I've got it too, yeah.
Yeah, I think if, a Fantasy Flight picked up that game and streamlined it a bit, because it does have a lot of upkeep. Even when you're playing on the computer, it's obvious that it's just got a ton of upkeep going on with generating the orcs. And
a ton of dice rolling, right? Random?
Oh, yeah. Lots and lots and lots of dice rolling.
Yeah.
I think that something like that might be successful for them. I don't know. They've got it kind of covered, but I don't know.
Hey, I do like the orc frenzy in that game. Were they frenzy?
It's part of that thing, I guess, where you get the feeling like the game system has got something else going on independent of the players.
Right.
And the players have to respond or deal with that. It's part of a, like, Shadows Over Camelot, Lord of the Rings, games like that, where the game system itself provides you with an additional challenge. So that does make it unique. I like that part of it.
Right. Now, I was also I see you like the card game San Juan. Have you ever played Puerto Rico?
I have only played it online, and I was not impressed. But
you like San Juan?
Told me I deserve to give that game another chance. I have never played the actual Puerto Rico itself. I've just tried the computer version.
But you do like San Juan?
I do. I'm surprised that I liked it as much as I did. I got it kind of as a throwaway trade on Board Game Geek. Heard good things about it. We like card games in general, just for fast playing. And I've got to say, it's clean. It plays fast. There's a lot of, I guess, card combos in there that you. I'm an old CCG-er, so I.
Okay.
You start putting together combinations of buildings and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's holding up pretty well, though.
Now, one thing I got to kind of razz you about. I was looking on your. You actually rated Candyland, and there are two.
Well, I got to admit, hey, I've got kids.
Yeah, but for kids, come on, that's a 10 game for kids, right?
Well. You know, even my son doesn't ask for it anymore.
Oh, okay.
We moved on to find other games like that. He really doesn't ask for it too much anymore, and I'm glad.
Yeah. I can see where I had a thread a while back where I was talking about these people that reviewed kids' games. You know.
Yeah, I think that's where you tore Mike a new one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Where he was right. What was the name of that game? The donkey?
Oh, I don't know. Something about donkeys pooping everywhere.
Yeah, where the donkey takes a poop. I can't recall the name of it. But did y'all play that up in Atlanta?
No, we didn't manage to work that one in. I was really looking forward to it, but Mike didn't even pack it.
Okay.
But as far as kids' games goes, I know that there's a lot of disagreement on how you should rate kids' games, but I think there are kids' games out there that are not a chore for parents to play with their children. Like, I'll give you an example. We picked up, there's a Fantasy Flight game called The Hobbit. Have you seen that?
I'm not familiar with that, no.
It's mostly a kids' game. It's gotten some pretty savage reviews on Board Game Geek, but really, if you look at it, it is very much a very light version of Talisman. You have adventure points and potions and all kinds of junk that go with Lord of the Rings. You got your items and allies and things like that. And essentially, you're trying to make it to the end of the board and kill Smaug at the very end of it. But it's a good example of, I think, a game that was intended for children that was attacked for all the wrong reasons. Because Candyland, it plays itself. Once you shuffle the deck, the game is over. You're just
right.
And this one. You do have some choices that you have to make, and I think that at least if you have that much going on, it makes it at least bearable for parents. But, with the cool theme, I love Lord of the Rings, and my son loved the game, so.
Yeah, let's talk about fantasy there. On my last interview with Jason Little, he was talking about Mage Knight's Dungeons and how he loved it, but I noticed on you rated low. Can you give us the opposing view on Mage Knight's Dungeons, why you didn't like it?
Well, it's not so much that I felt it was a bad game or a bad system. Probably my review or my rating is not entirely fair. It's just that we tinkered with. They don't really give you a lot. Wizard Kings, the Columbia game.
Yes, the board game.
Only give you sort of a perfunctory scenario in the rule book, and it's kind of up to you. And if it weren't for Chris Farrell, I don't know if anyone would even have bothered to continue to play Wizard Kings with all those great scenarios he has.
Exactly, right.
But it's kind of the same deal with Mage Knight Dungeons. You're kind of just given a board and a few rules and say, hey, go at it. And that's not terribly fun, so we tried to come up with scenarios with monsters and things like that. Play like a quest game that you could play against each other. And we just never could never find a right balance for it. I think the system itself is really good. I wish that they'd given maybe the players a little bit more guidance, scenarios or things like that. So
probably
if I just were willing to work a little bit more, it probably deserves a better rating. I like the click system itself. I think that's probably one of the better things that have happened to miniatures games is when HeroClix came out. That really gave the...
Yeah, my view on that is that they came up with the click system, then they just tried to build a game around it.
Yeah, and meant to say Mage Knight being first, not HeroClix, but that that eliminated a lot of the complaints that had kept people from getting into miniatures gaming. People can't paint. When you do the rulers thing, which I know the original Mage Knight used a ruler system, but they moved to a grid shortly after that for all the rest of their games, including Mage Knight Dungeons.
Right.
Having to track stats for everybody while all your stats are right there on the dial. So I think that was a really good thing to happen to miniatures gaming. I know that WizKids has had some trouble lately with its customers. Jason could probably or may elaborate on that more. I know that he's had some pretty sour dealings with WizKids in the past. Because Jason Little had helped design Sports Clicks.
Right, right.
And which I think is a great game. Sports Clicks is a lot of fun. We used to play a lot of MLB Showdown, which is the Wizards of the Coast offering. And Sports Clicks is just miles and above better than that. And ever since we tried that, we never played the Showdown game again.
Right.
Once Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro saw that as a market and kind of moved in on it, I think it's been hard times for WizKids.
Right.
Hasbro moved out and snatched up all the licenses that people really cared about.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So I think they're having a tough time, but I think that was a really good thing to happen for that particular genre of gaming. It kept it going, and you get a major player like Wizards of the Coast in on it, and now you go into Walmart and you buy HeroScape.
Right. What do you think of HeroScape?
I love HeroScape. I think it's great. The system is flexible. Really looking forward to Marvel HeroScape that's coming out.
Yeah, I was talking with Michael Barnes about that. He was looking forward to that too. I think the system is. I don't know. I go back and forth on that. Sometimes I tend to think the system may be a little too simple.
If it weren't for the flexibility, I think of the terrain and scenarios and
the cliffs
how many characters have they released for that thing now?
Exactly.
The endless combinations of character powers and things like that.
You get all the expansions on that?
I've kind of cooled off there for the longest time. I was just snatching them up as soon as I found them. But I think once they started doing the con exclusives, they were really hard to get a hold of. It kind of broke me of it and said, well, if I can't get them all, then I'm not just going to go in a buying frenzy, but I still pick them up.
Do you have I was noticing on the one that's really hard to get that I wanted was the one with the gorillas in it. Do you have that one?
That pack came with the gorillas and little mechanized hounds, I think.
The hounds, yeah. I noticed that last time I was on eBay, a pack of that was going for like $50.
Are you serious?
Yeah, exactly. I've just wanted, was that one of the exclusive? I thought that was
that was at Walmart.
You can't find it anywhere.
All of the HeroScape purchases I've made have either been at Walmart or Target.
Right.
So I know that for a long time, Collection 1, which we picked up right away, was going for a lot of cash for the packs, like the Roman Archers and things like that.
Yeah.
That's cool now. I think Hasbro has pumped out product into the channel again, but kind of dropped the ball there for a while because, for example, like Collection 4, I think, it may have been Collection 4. It was impossible to find. You go in stores and nobody had it. They just had a glut of the other product.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully they've worked through that. I'm seeing the new wave showing up on the shelves again, so I'm hopeful that they keep it together.
But when's do we have a date on Marvel HeroScape when that's due out? Do you know?
Last thing I heard was the end of April.
End of April. That's right now, right?
That's right around the corner, but I'll believe it when I see it. We went through having the all the stores had store space, shelf space marked for it, and that never materialized. I ended up filling it with High School the Musical.
That's yes, cool. Yes,
right there.
What did you think? Have you played Fantasy Flight Marvel Heroes?
Marvel Heroes, yeah, I like that game. As a matter of fact, I did a review for it on Fortress Ameritrash.
What did you rate that?
I gave it an 8. I think it's a unique take. I know a lot of people expected a skirmish level game, kind of what Marvel HeroScape is going to be given to people. Kind of been conditioned to expect that sort of thing. A lot of the superhero games are, your guys are out here in the streets and pick up a car and bash up somebody over the head with it. But it's more from, they're trying to recreate, actual storylines and happenings outside of individual battles in a comic book without having it drag on for, hours and hours.
Right, right.
Hours. It's from the same design team that did War of the Rings, so of course I was going to give it a look no matter what. And I love the comic book theme. I know that it's kind of gotten mixed reviews, though.
Yes, it has. That's why I was interested in your take on it there.
It's a lot of resource management, which I know is kind of a Euro no-no word. But, you can't afford to keep all your teams out at one time, so you're trying to optimize, make sure you can't go rampaging with the Hulk every turn, or you run out of points to spend on that. You've got these crimes that are showing up that you score points off of, and if you really get down to it, you could probably strip the theme off of it and be left with the same kind of game, but the theme lends enough flavor, and they paid enough attention to some of the smaller details I think it makes it a good game. I don't know.
You mentioned earlier Wizard Kings of the Columbia games. What are you a fan of the Columbia games?
I do. Well, I've only played a couple. Hammer of the Scots and Wizard Kings, but their games are pretty much, the system is it's a great system, and you know, their games receive high praise for being accessible war games for people to play. You know, especially Wizard Kings has all kinds of customization options to go with. You know, I think a lot of the games kind of share, you know, you've got that core mechanic involved where you've got your unit strength and you're throwing dice based on your attack and
right.
Stuff like that, but it's a good system. It's not so, doesn't really bog you down in a lot of war game minutia that keeps it's kind of a barrier for entry for a lot of people to play war games. So I think they've been really successful.
Right.
Like that.
Did you go to the Gathering of Friends as a reporter at large for Fortress Ameritrash?
I missed my invite. Checked the mailbox every day. I was crushed. Crushed.
I could have sworn they had a red badge mailed to you to go to Gathering of Friends. What conventions do you go to?
And I kind of see their point of view, I guess. I think the problem is really just what they chose to name it, because by implying the Gathering of Friends, the opposite viewpoint is, well, hey, you're not our friend, so go away. I think if they called it, you know, Moon Con or something like that, they probably wouldn't receive so much.
Right. Do you go to any other any conventions yourself, or
it's been a while. You know, having a family and kids, it's harder to hit
exactly.
The
yeah.
Cons, but you know, I've got a game group of guys here that are usually about 8 to 10 strong, and we usually organize a monthly game day, get together one of our houses and play. So we get our regular game and fix in. I'd like to go to a convention. I know that. I think Barnes said the end of May, maybe they were having a game fest of some kind in Atlanta.
Yeah, Ward Batty's event, yeah.
Yeah, so and that sounds cool. I don't know what my schedule is going to be like, but that's something I'd like to look into.
Yeah, my brother has been there, and he praises it. It's a really good time, and Ward does a good job putting that event on, from what I hear.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Listen, you're there in Huntsville. Is there any last time I was there, is there any game stores there in Huntsville?
There's
like none, is there?
There's a really nice lady who owns a store called Bookmark.
Where is that?
Moved probably about 3 times. They're way on the south end of Huntsville now. As a matter of fact, right after Christmas, my brother and I went looking to go to Bookmark, and she'd had to move because I guess the landlord or whatever was charging a bunch of extra rent. So she keeps getting farther and farther removed from.
Do you remember Book Villa?
I do. Did I say Bookmark? Book Villa is the place I mean. I'm sorry.
Oh, that is Book Villa.
That's the same lady. She's still in business.
Is she? Where's her store now there?
Way, way on the south side of Huntsville. As a matter of fact, if you remember the old location that was by that movie theater, that I think it was a dollar movie theater. Or something,
yes, yes. Uh-huh.
She's about a mile south of that now.
Mile south of that, okay.
The only other really gaming store, and it's not really a gaming store, is The Deep.
The Deep. Yeah, they have miniatures there, right?
They do. Now, mostly theirs is comic books. They have some miniatures and CCGs. And I remember we'd suggested to the owner that, hey, you know, you guys should probably carry a few board games. There's none to buy here. And we went in a few weeks later, and he'd gotten a ton of Steve Jackson games. So not sure if that's progress or not at this point. A little munchkin, maybe. he still got it. He still has them on the shelf.
Yeah, you need to clue him in on what to buy there. I think they do okay if they got the right product in.
Yeah, and it's kind of that whole, if you're not familiar with the whole board game thing, it's hard to make informed decisions.
Yeah.
Maybe I could get him to hire me on as an advisor, and I'd get him some killer games.
Exactly.
It's hard to compete. You know, pretty much we order from the lady at Book Villa, because she'll have to special order for us. She's got a really small selection of games, but just so that we don't have zero board game shops in Huntsville, which is pretty much, we're pretty much close to it. We had a Hobby Town for a long time, and when they first opened, they had an amazing selection of board games. They were carrying Queen's Gambit, they were carrying Talisman, just pretty much anything that you can imagine, all the Risk variants. And slowly but surely, that space kept shrinking and shrinking until eventually it was off in some small corner of the store where they had just a handful of games. And
yeah.
I can't help but thinking they missed the whole board game explosion because now they're really popular. Again, during that time when they had it, even Board Game Geek really didn't hit nuclear mass, I guess, till about 2004 or so.
That's right, yeah.
And but they finally went out of business, had a big clearance sale, and that was that. But I know that it's tough because the internet
sales, yeah,
like that. So I think it's tough. But
well, let's go back to your adventure in Atlanta. Can you is Barnes as crazy in person?
You know, he looks just like his avatar. I was incredulous. He was grinning like that the whole time. It was kind of but Robert and Michael, just a couple of regular guys, real friendly. There were several guys. I met a guy, Steve Avery. They call him poor old Steve Avery.
Uh-huh.
And he was trying to explain the rules to Circus Imperium, which is...
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Tell me about that. I've never heard of that.
I hadn't either until we sat down to play it, and we're talking... Ooh, Ameritrash from the 80s right there. imagine the cheapest productions from the 80s and then cheapen that a little bit more. And
is that kind of like Circus Maximus?
Paper fold-out map. And there were about 50 different ways to take damage, as I could tell. The creatures driving your chariot could take damage. Your chariot could take damage on four sides. You had armor. You had a shield. You had hit points. Your driver had hit points. And every time that we would do something, they'd say, oh, wait. You know, there was a rule that we'd forgotten, or we weren't quite sure what we were supposed to be doing. I managed to take the first turn ahead of everyone else. Then Robert came barreling through the turn, plowed into my cart, ran me into the wall, and then they all took turns running me over. It was great.
is that similar to Circus Maximus?
I understand. Michael said Circus Maximus is a much better game. It's similar, except it has a weird alien theme. You know, you don't have lions or whatever. Regular earth creature driving your carriage. There's some kind of alien beast or something like that.
Oh, okay. But it's a chariot race.
I've never heard of it before. It was interesting, but it was made in a time when, you know, hey, let's add a rule on here. Why not?
It's kind of the thing that would give Reiner a nightmare, right?
Reiner would be waking in a cold sweat even thinking about making a game like that.
Hey, talking about Reiner, I see... You and I are definitely on the same page. We like Ameritrash, but we have to give Reiner credit when it comes to Raw.
Raw is a great game, and I'm probably one of the few, I guess, Ameritrash Reiner apologists. And it's, you know, Robert pointed out to me, and it's probably true. He's done so many games that he has to hit, you know, every so often with people. Raw is just... You know, it's a clean, fun game that plays quick. You have a lot of short-term strategies, evaluation, things like that.
Right.
No, the theme is barely there. It doesn't. It's not as dry as a lot of the Euros that you'll play. Players really get into it. They're chanting rah, rah.
Exactly, and I get requests for that game almost every a lot.
We play it together. Here at work. We've got a lunch group that we play with.
Oh, okay.
It's usually just three of us, me and my brother, and another girl that works with us, and that's one that's hit the table several times. It's a big hit.
Are you the one that started your work group there?
Yeah.
I told the story, I think, before. I saw some guys at work playing Trivial Pursuit, and I was thinking, hey, these guys need to learn some good games.
You got those guys hooked on, what was it, Family Business, right?
Yeah. And it sounds like you had a similar experience, right?
Yep. Like I said, I know I'll be... probably outcast in exile, but I've tried to keep it to mostly Euros at work, only because of the constrained playing time.
The time, yeah.
Can't really bust out, you know, heck, I don't even know, but, you know, we've played Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, and Raw, and I think those games have their place.
When you started your work group, what really went over with these people? What really made their eyes pop open and say, hey, this is great?
Well, that... Really, what it is most people have no idea that these games are out there whatsoever.
Right.
They don't even have the first clue.
They don't. What, yeah, you're right.
You like the board game? What do you like to play? Oh, Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And they have you pull in the. You know, my other brother is not a heavy board gamer like my other brother and I are. And he always jokes that we're just pulling these games out of our ass. Where do these games come from? Where do you guys always have something new hitting the table?
Right.
And so. you know, just at first it's a novelty thing. Well, you know, wow, I had no idea these kind of board games were out there. So pretty much anything will stick. I'm trying to remember. I think Raw was the first game that we played here because I knew it would play in the time.
In about an hour, yeah.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Had strategy and things that, you know, players would be able to latch on to. You know, this is you score these kind of points. You're working towards points. Then we played, played Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride. We tried playing Settlers, but Settlers does not fit in an hour with a new player.
Yeah.
Not even close. We did try something a little trashier. We played Draco and Company. You ever heard of that game?
No, I haven't.
Which we're talking about with Robert and Michael. They absolutely hated that game. it's goofy. You know, it's I think Bruno Feduti designed it. He's, you know, his games are always chaos and silly things going on in them. And
I'll tell you one week.
A ton of game text on them.
And,
you know, being a CCG fan, I have no trouble with that. You just look at it, you assimilate it, and you go on. But that game ended up taking us about an hour and 20 minutes for something that should have taken half an hour, and it was my fault for not thinking, oh, well, to someone who's never played a CCG, this is a lot of game text coming at you.
Right.
So it really just depends on the group.
Yeah, the one I had a lot of luck with, too, is Citadels. If you
try Citadels. Love Citadels.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Yeah, we've had luck with both our regular gamers and then our family as well playing that.
And that's pretty close to, that's kind of a variation to Mission Red Planet, right?
Yeah. Same designer, same kind of role selection mechanic.
Was that the first time you played it up there with Michael?
That was the first time. It's something that's been on our radar for a while because we like the designer, the production looks nice. And it may have had to do with how many we had playing. I think we had 6 players, which I just felt like I had zero control over what was going on. I have no problem with chaos in my games. As a matter of fact, I love a little bit of chaos in every game that I play.
Yeah, I do too.
But I don't know. I just, at the end, I came in second behind Robert, who'd kind of run away with the score, but I'm not sure I could have duplicated.
You had no idea why you were second, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of like the Reiner Knizia's game, the arena game, Colossal Arena.
Yes.
Arena. We've played that with both 3 and 5, and with 5, it is just a far inferior game than with 3. Because you play a card or two, and the round might be over. So you've had very little chance to influence what's going on. It's kind of how I felt with Mission Red Planet. I'll probably give it another shot. I don't know, but it didn't grab me like I was hoping it would.
All right. Well, I don't want to take. I know we both got to get back to work here. And it was great talking with you, Ken. Are you gonna? Did you say you were gonna plan on going up to Atlanta?
I would like to. Being that I've just been so recently, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to swing it. But
right.
I would like to. I know I'm definitely gonna try and get down there and game with them again, just because it's like I said, it's an amazing environment. You've got so many people playing a lot of different games. It's kind of like you would hope Board Game Geek would be, where everybody is kind of doing their own thing and nobody's really, you know, bashing each other for that. It's kind of what was going on down there. So I was impressed.
Oh, that's great.
We had that here, but
maybe down there again. Yeah, I was going to try to get to Atlanta myself soon with my brother, and we'll see if I'm not sure about that yet, but we'll see what we can work out.
And you definitely got to look those guys up.
I will do that. Thanks again, Ken.
Hey, appreciate it, Steve.
Uh-huh. Keep in touch.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
They showed the whole thing on TV. They went and broadcast my deepest feelings, and they made a fool of me. I'm gonna lay low in Mexico and let the sun shine down on me and drink cerveza until the sun sets and find a señorita there just for me. I tried romancing with the computer. I meant to have some high-tech fun. But when I finally met my woman, she must have weighed more than a ton. Sunshine down on me and
margarita there just for me. My mother sent me to a church group. It's where the singles go to meet. I met a woman and tried to kiss her. She slapped my face and said she'd pray for me. I'm gonna lay low in Mexico and let the sun shine down on me and drink cerveza until the sun sets and find a señorita there just for me. I finally met my Spanish lady.
All right. I was just talking to my brother. Sorry about putting the whole song on there, but he was reading some of the critiques that I get on my podcast, and one guy was saying, "Come on, a 4-minute song, man." And my brother was saying, "What's the attention span of these people? They can't sit through." But anyway, I know. But anyway, and speaking of, you know, all these critiques I get on my podcast, how come he never, and one guy did like a whole page of a critique. How come you don't see that on the Dice Tower? How come you don't see that on that podcast that Aldi just posted from 2005? What's with that? An old 2005 podcast with Alan Moon. I mean, come on. And all the crazy tags that you see on mine that say old news. How come they don't put old news on a 2005 podcast that Aldi posts? But that's okay. Anyway, I want to talk about that just for a second. I did listen to that podcast with Alan Moon that Aldi and Dirk did, and you talk about something funny. If you folks didn't hear my podcast with when I interviewed Dirk, go listen to that, and then go listen to the one he did when he was interviewing Alan Moon. I mean, the difference in demeanor is 180 degrees. I mean, I wonder if Dirk at the gathering of friends was such on good behavior that he must have been wearing a red badge, you know, afraid he might not get invited back, but absolutely amazing. And listening to Alan Moon, you know, I almost had to give Alan a pass. You know, I've been a lot of critique on the gathering of friends, how exclusive it is. And he began to explain a little of that in the podcast that Aldi posted from 05, which is old news. But Alan started to explain. He said, you know, this is like a private party. And I said, okay, I can understand that. I mean, when I have private parties, I can't invite everybody in the world. But then he goes on to say, if somebody wants to bring somebody, get this. Alan says, if you want to bring somebody, you want to try to get somebody into the gathering of friends, you got to have two references, two recommendations. Somebody's got to recommend you. Then you have to second that recommendation. And I'm thinking, you know, if I had a private party and somebody, this is the difference between me and Alan Moon. If somebody in my private party, if one of my guests wanted to invite somebody I didn't know, I'd slap them on the back and say, sure, the more the merrier, bring them along. Have a big smile on my face. Alan Moon wants a recommendation. Unbelievable. I mean, you folks decide for yourself. Listen to that. Decide for yourself. But that kind of thing. I mean, he automatically, it seems to me, he's underestimating people. He's automatically assuming that they're going to act up or be a bad influence or misbehave, so to speak, at the gathering of friends. But, you know, the only reason to exclude anybody from something like that is just a space limitation. And I would challenge Alan Moon. I would say, Alan, on your next gathering of friends, don't invite any of the same people. Invite invite a totally new, let the first 600 people that's never been before come, and I guarantee you'll have a better time than you ever had at the gathering of friends. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. I would bet $100 on that easy that Alan would have a better time with those 600 people that have never been there than the same old stuffed shirts that show up every year after year. Now, who's here? The Game Zombie. My brother, Randy Weeks, the Game Zombie, is going to talk with us. And we're going to talk to him right now. All right, we're here talking with the Game Zombie, Randy Weeks, here. A lot of you don't know, I was talking a little bit before when I did the DW Trip interview, that I said DW Trip was only the few people that had a Harley on the podcast. Randy, the Game Zombie, has a Harley too, isn't that right?
That is correct.
All right. Well, the Game Zombie is a member of the League of Untouchable American Gamers, and one of his tasks is to review podcasts, the other podcasts, because frankly, I don't have time to listen to all that crap that's out there. And what sparked this was an email I received from a Mr. James Brooks. And I want to read this to you. Apparently, the latest episode on the Dice Tower talks about the top 10 disappointing games. And Mr. Brooks had referred me to... I wouldn't even known this unless James Brooks hadn't referred me to this. He goes on to say that he wants me to check out these guys' top 10, quote, disappointing games. And one of the guys on the podcast was Greg Schlosser, the Grand Poobah himself, and we're going to talk about that with the Game Zombie. He goes, wow, they're really going out on a limb with these choices. I sure hope their review copy supplies don't dry up after this bomb was dropped. Because most of the guys picked a bunch of games that are out of print and everything. And one of my complaints, if you've been following the podcast, is that none of these guys pick anything major. As they won't rate anything low as a one. And you listen to this, right, Randy, the Game Zombie? You listen to this podcast.
Yes, I did, in complete detail. Sometimes.
Did you stay awake?
Painful detail. first off, these Euro gamers, they got a thin skin, so we're not saying these are bad people. We're not calling their character into question. We're just making some comments about, you're going to set you up as the grand Schubert or rhubarb of gaming. You should be willing to accept criticism. And these guys, and I think I've got some points here that's going to show a little bit of
all
the
right,
power
let's hear
they
it.
Have.
What kind of power? What are you talking about?
They, kind of skipping around, we'll go to Schlosser's top 10 out, and the majority of these are out of print or never heard of, obviously. The one game that he did cut was Celtica by one of his favorite designers.
Right, because that's designed by Kramer.
Right, and you would give him credit for that. One of the things that stood out, though, is there's no review from the Grand Rhubarb on... Celtica on Board Game Geek.
The Grand Rhubarb.
I'm sorry, the Grand Poobah.
The Grand Rhubarb.
Now, this is one of his top 10 most disappointing games.
Yeah, and there's no... Yeah, we
and
did
there's
check
no
the,
information
right.
on Board Game Geek to
you're
steer
You're right, we
clear
did check
this
out. We did check this out. Greg on Celtica does not have a review, no session report, and no even rating on the rating
None
section.
Whatsoever. Now, the thing I remember about this game, because it did interest me, just the theme and the components and the designers, but this game was gimped, right? And they're saying these people don't have power. Celtica was gimped out of the gate. Virtually nobody has played, that game was dead in the water.
Yeah.
And they're saying this pre-publicity that they have no power. That game was DOA.
He also mentioned Africa that he didn't like.
Yeah, and that's a Kinesia game. I don't know if that's still in print or not.
No, I think it was out of print.
I don't know who printed that, but that's... both of him and Vassal named Time Control, which apparently was the only game ever published by this company.
Right, so that's the point. There's all these companies, the games they name as a disappointing games, they're from companies that only have one or two games that they ever published out.
Correct. Or like TSR Avalon Hill.
So that
games.
Was a point. Yeah, that was a point James Brooks from in his email was making that they're not going to cut
now
off
will,
the free
I will
supply.
Make, give Vassal a little credit on time control. He said he and kind of making the League of American Gamers point. This guy sent out free copies of Time Control, and it, apparently it was a turd. you know, and the company folded. But apparently, this guy learned from that. He learned you just can't shove crap out there and
that's
it'll
right.
sell.
That's right.
And he took his licks like a man. Yeah, you know, apparently he's got something out now that's a good system.
That's right.
That's the only way you're ever going to get
right.
any good product
and
on the market.
Greg Schlosser, being a game politician, is never going to give a low rating, and we're going to get his crap on the market after this. Because
and I guess the other point on Vassal's top 10, he cut a Star Wars, you know, that's mass market. Let's see, Age of Mythology, I'll agree with him on that. I played that once. That game was painful. I didn't like it. Warriors, which I have not played. Interesting point, though, Tom. If you're going to say the game is disappointing, there's no need to apologize just because it's Alan Moon.
Yeah.
He's not.
Well, he's
got to
make sure he doesn't cut off his free copies from Alan Moon.
He shouldn't be above critique because, you know, Reiner Knizia, every game he makes is not a home run.
That's right.
He's resting on his laurels, selling product off of his names a lot of time, and people that are willing to buy into that are going to get burned one too many times. Overall, Vassal, he has some good points on his podcast. The interviews I could have done without, they're just basically glorified, just commercials. What's coming out from the gathering of friends?
Commercials, yeah. That's all they got from his podcast,
yeah,
much commercials.
I mean, we'll never have to worry about getting an invitation from the gathering of friends, so I guess that's as close as we'll ever get. another thing that stood out, the Dice Tower is sponsored by Fun Again.
I noticed that.
And Fun Again states, for the best reviews, come to a commercial site.
These guys don't go review. They don't do reviews.
No.
I don't call them reviews at all. I call them ADRs. ADRs is what Schlosser and Vassal does. That's an ad disguised as a review.
Or, you know,
ADRs.
A simple game synopsis of the rules.
Yep. Cut and paste. Didn't you say Vassal, all he did was cut and paste?
No, I got to be honest with you. I haven't logged into Board Game Geek in a couple of years because I found watching paint dry was more exciting than logging into that. But I did log in just to see what was going on with all this, and you know, it's sad but true. A lot of the points y'all are making are true. There's an elitist attitude on there. You've got tastemakers. It's just sad.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Vassal did have some good points in his cast. He, Blue Moon City, he enjoyed that. He reviewed a recent gaming session. The comedy, for me, fell a little flat.
What about that German guy?
That
German guy that was trying to do... We had to play it back twice because I didn't understand it. We figured out on the Beowulf, he was trying to do some kind of joke.
Yeah, he was trying to make a joke at Fantasy Flight's expense of their numerous spinoffs of Beowulf and World of Warcraft. And
needless to say, that fell flat.
Yeah, German humor, it just doesn't. And at the very interesting point, at the very end of that, he would like to thank his friendly listeners, including Michael Barnes.
Yeah, he mentioned Michael Barnes.
Yeah,
on
just
there.
Threw that in like a little jab.
Uh-huh.
And then just inexplicably yells, Banzai! Like he just kicked some ass for mentioning Michael. Ooh, we mentioned Michael Barnes' name. Ooh. That could have been, that whole segment could have been the German game. That could have been just cut out. Way too long a podcast. Painfully long.
How come we don't see detailed reviews on this like we do on my detailed critiques?
I really don't know. I'll be honest with you, I don't know. Whatever I can offer is speculation. Vassal made another good point about a game. I think, what was it, Liberty?
Liberté,
which he just thought was phenomenal, you know, a home run. played it with five or six other people, and they were just like, this is a turd. So, and I, you know, it does depend a lot on your game group, who you're playing with.
Yeah.
I played a game of Carcassonne that was just so painful. I don't ever want to play that game again. And Carcassonne is not a bad game. I was playing it with some young college kids, and two of them were one of these that's just towered over the tiles and counted up every scoring possibility
right,
in their
right.
head. Yeah, you're going to win that way. And, you know, yeah, I could do that too, but it's just not any fun to me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I have no, but, you know, it's about, you can think this game is just the perfect game, and if you can't find anybody to play it with, it's not a good game.
Right.
And he had a good point on that.
So, out of an hour and a half, what was it, an hour and a half podcast, he had one good point?
No, he made some good points. And actually, he kind of gave a negative review.
Not negative,
in his top 10 list. Now, this is just something I
what
researched.
What negative review did he do?
It's not really a review, but when the Rio Grande commercial came on from The Gathering of Friends, Fassel said, basically, turn in taxis is no fun. It's not
any
fun.
Oh, he said that.
And he said, you know, he said he likes a lot of Rio Grande games, and he dislikes a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. Let's see. Tom Fassel, one of the second top two reviewers, I would say, name-wise, on The Geek. And Turning Taxis was Game of the Year, 2006.
Right, that's right.
Wouldn't you think he would review that game for the geek community that he just said was no
fun?
Yeah,
we looked on there. We didn't see a Tom Fassel review for Turning Taxis.
No, there is no review.
Yeah, okay. Why is that?
I don't know, but there was a Schlosser review on there.
Yes, it was. Greg Schlosser did the review, and it's one of the few he actually put in the reviews instead of a session report.
He did a review.
Yeah.
Now, I've read some reviews or advertisements.
ADRs,
in print,
ads disguised as reviews is what I call
in print from Rio Grande with the name Greg Schlosser on them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he was compensated monetarily for those.
Yeah.
Now, is he being compensated monetarily for the tripe being posted on Board Game Geek? Is he a carnival barker for Rio Grande? Saying,
yeah.
Come, you know, this is the game, this is the one that hits it out of the park. So in the podcast, Tom Fassel played Blue Moon City.
That's right.
And this is just random. I looked up Tom's review of Blue Moon City on The Geek.
Yeah.
And I agreed with it. It was a good... I've played Blue Moon City. I don't think it's the best game in the world. Is it Game of the Year? I don't know. Apparently it was nominated along with Turn and Taxis for mm-hmm. Game of the Year from the prestigious German Spiel whatever.
Right, Spiel des Jahres, yeah.
And in his Blue Moon City review, he says he was surprised Turn and Taxis won the game over Blue Moon City. So I look again, another game nominated for Game of the Year. But there's no review of Blue Moon City from the Grand Poobah.
Oh, the Grand Rhubarb.
There's no review. Now, if you're the Grand Poobah, would you not review the game
That's
nominated
a good point.
For
yeah.
Game
where
of
is,
the Year?
Where is his review?
I mean, if you're that, you know, elite, well-known gamer, give some of us rubes in the sticks a clue as to what is Game of the Year.
Right.
It's just speculation. Blue Moon City is a fantasy flight game.
Right.
I think, does Schlosser not get review copies from Fantasy Flight?
Maybe he doesn't.
Fassel, on the other hand.
We know Fassel has because he's played Tide of Iron.
And that's not even out yet. Turn and Taxis is a Rio Grande game. Did Fassel not get a review copy of Turn and Taxis?
He must not have got a copy.
Speculation, all you know.
But very interesting.
I guess overall, a little over an hour of my life. I would much rather have been in a titty bar drinking beer with D.W. Tripp. I can't get that hour and a half back. But,
that's right.
It's interesting. You know, you look, you know, the conspiracy theories, the bannings, all this stuff. There's a lot going on that us unknown gamers, instead of well-known gamers, aren't privy to. So
that's right.
I think money's the bottom line. Money makes the world go round.
Yeah. Follow the money.
It's sad. It's just sad.
It's sad, and that is the Game Zombie.
All right. We want to thank the Game Zombie for doing that great review of the Dice Tower podcast. You know, I would do it myself, but, you know, listening to the podcast is like taking Benadryl for me. It just puts me to sleep. I want to thank you folks for listening. This has been the Ultimate Podcast from the League of Untouchable American Gamers, coming to you from Houston, Texas. You folks have a great week. We'll see you next time. Thanks.
After much deliberation, I have decided to ban you. You're bad for the good of the neighborhood. If they could take you back, I don't think they would, cause you and your friends are up to no good. You're bad for the good of the neighborhood. Bad for the good of the neighborhood. They want to cover up your head with a big black hood so you can't see them trade sheep for wood. Bad for the good of the neighborhood. You're the pink flamingo and a pink intrusion in an otherwise happy home. Why don't you pack your bags and leave these intellectuals alone? You're bad for the good of the neighborhood. They broke the bones in your hands so you can't tie good, but you can tie with your feet, so screw them up good. Bad for the good of the neighborhood. You're bad for the good of the neighborhood. But you can't keep them down, cause the boy's too good. We do not want you playing our German games. You are not welcome.